Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another fine edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, we are continuing. I don't know if we're wrapping it up today, perhaps.
I think we're wrapping it up. We'll find out.
Estate planning for taxes coming through tax season recently, and you have some more thoughts on this subject. And I love the way you started this whole series with taxes are optional.
Yes.
Estate taxes are optional.
Yeah, they really are. And not many people look at estate taxes as being optional. Now, remember, there's a very distinct difference between income taxes and estate taxes. Income taxes are what you have to pay every year because you've made money. So anything that comes into my law firm, I have to pay taxes on it. When an individual works for somebody, they have to pay taxes on that money. When they have capital gains or royalties through investments, you have to pay your taxes on that, on those monies each and every year. That's income tax. However, we're talking about estate tax, and estate taxes are optional. So in Washington State, anyone who has right around $2 million is just a little bit more, $2,193,000. If you reach that level of having that much in your estate or under your control, that would include your house, your investments, your IRAs, cash accounts. It includes personal property. It includes life insurance benefits. It includes everything under your control that you can determine where it goes. That is a part of your estate. And if that reaches around $2 million, then there is a probability that you will be exposed to an estate tax in Washington. Now, on the federal level, it's much, much higher. That's at $12 million currently, and that's per person. So in Washington, if you're married, you get to double that $2 million into four. And if you're married on a federal level, you get to double that $12 million into $24 million. But that's only if you do proper estate planning. Mm. You do not get to double. You do not get to utilize both. They're called exemptions. The first $2 million is exempt from tax. You do not get to have the exemption double if you don't do proper planning. As a matter of fact, I've watched many people walk into my office with more than that sum, and a spouse has passed away, and they never did proper estate planning. So guess what? Everything went to the surviving spouse, and now the surviving spouse is going to have to pay a tax unless we do something different. And that's what we've been talking about, is what are the things that we need to do so that we don't have to pay an unnecessary tax? And we've gone through a myriad of things, but the very first thing that we need to do is we need to make sure that you do proper estate planning. And unfortunately, most estate plans that I review are not done properly for tax purposes. So so a lot of people come into the office with wills. They come in even with a testamentary trust, which is a trust that's stuck inside of a will. And typically these types of plans will not prepare you for proper tax planning. Mm. So therefore, we need to do basic, good, strong tax planning at the beginning. That's the foundational plan. And then if you still exceed those numbers, if you still exceed $4 million, if you still exceed $24 million, then there's other things that we can do. And we've spent the past weeks talking about those. So you can head back to legacyandfaith.com, and there's past podcasts for this entire discussion. But really, estate taxes are something that you don't need to pay. We can plan so that we can get money to other places. And look, this is not illegal. It's not that we have to pay a tax. And if we are wise with our finances, that somehow we're escaping the system. No, we are supposed to be good stewards. And that means that we are supposed to be good administrative givers. So why would we want to give money to federal or state governments if we don't have to? That's being a good steward. Let's be good stewards. Let's make sure we have strong and good planning done out of the gate. And then we can talk about step number two, which is all estate taxes are optional. It just depends on which avenue we want to go through in order to make that happen.
Well, we're kind of up to the point where you're talking about what are some of the results to inheritors, I guess, when an estate is planned properly.
Yeah, there's a lot of different potential consequences to a beneficiary. And so let's go through just a couple of the basics. So if we simply give money to our children or to someone that is going to be our beneficiary, so the basics of a will are that it directs who gets the finances, but it does very, very little else. As a matter of fact, a will in its true nature has no tax planning at all, other than pay the taxes. Okay, so that's the result of using a will. A beneficiary designation is oftentimes coupled with utilizing a will package. And that does the same thing, which is by contract, an institution looks at their beneficiary list, if you have named one, and it says, who's the beneficiary? And they're just going to get the money to the proper individual. Now, those things on a basic level are good. We got the right money to the right people. That's assuming that your will is updated, and that's assuming that you've looked at your beneficiary lists in the past 5 to 10 years and that you haven't changed your mind on something. So even saying that that's good, there's assumptions built into that statement. But it depends on what asset is actually passed to the beneficiary, and it also depends on how that asset was titled when it goes to the beneficiary. So there's layers of tax consequences, and really those two main categories are what we have to discuss, is what type of an asset it was and how was it titled when someone passed so that it went to the proper person that we claim to be our beneficiary. Mm. So we have to look at assets and we have to look at titling when we talk about tax consequences down to the next generation, because there are tax consequences to an inheritor. And so we have to talk about it.
Well, probably the most common asset I would think would be an IRA.
Yeah, certainly.
A regular IRA or a Roth IRA.
Yeah, and those are two different things. Mm-hmm. So any tax deferred, we call them qualified funds, which is they qualify for tax deferment. So that could be a 401k at work. That could be a 403b at work. And there's many different renditions of what does it mean to have retirement funds. So really, a retirement fund for our discussion here right now is you've never paid tax on it. You have the privilege of putting money aside before taxes are paid, and they are tax deferred until you actually take the money out of the account. Then at that time, the money is taxed. So the benefit of utilizing retirement accounts is that you get to put more money to the side because there's no taxes yet. And all of that money, theoretically, will continue to grow as it's invested. So the average stock market will double every 7 to 12 years, depending on how aggressive your investment style is. So over the course of the last 100 years in the stock market, there's really never been a 10-year period of losing assets. So money, theoretically, will grow in an IRA, and more money will grow because you were able to put it aside before tax. But the problem is that the U.S. government wants their portion of the pie, regardless of whose hands it's in. Mm. So then the taxing theory is that if you, as the account holder, you created the IRA or the 401k or 403b or whatever it is, you have not paid taxes on it. You get taxed when it's brought out. But if you die, then it goes to whomever you have listed as your beneficiaries. Now, the result of that being in the hands of your beneficiaries, this law changed 2 years ago. It used to be that the beneficiary could hold an IRA, and over the course of their life, they could then take what's called a required minimum distribution. They would be able to use a single life tax table to determine how much they have to take. So how that would work is the old system was, if you have an IRA, Let's say that a 50-year-old inherited $100,000 of an IRA. So the IRS table that we would use, we would say, okay, 50-year-old, how many years do you have left to live? And that's just an actuarial table that is developed by the IRS. They update it consistently. So currently for a male, we are expected to die around 86 years old right now. So if a 50-year-old inherited it, for simple math terms, this is not how the calculation works, but I'm giving you the theory of how it works, then that 50-year-old would have 36 years left. So then we would look at how much do they have on December 31st, and that was $100,000. So we would take 1/36th of $100,000, and the government, the taxing entity, says you are required, 50-year-old inheritor, you are required to take that much money out of your inherited IRA. It is a requirement. It is a minimum distribution based upon your life expectancy. So with each year that you get older, you are required to take more and more. But that as you head towards that date of death, according to the IRS table, then the percentage that you are required to take is larger because you have a shorter life expectancy. Now, there are some classifications of individuals that can still use that system. Number one, if you are permanently disabled, or if you, so that would include an adult child who is special needs, if you have been permanently disabled and can demonstrate to the government that you have a permanent disability and are unable to work, then you will remain under that system. If you are a minor child, so if you have minor children, and you were to die in a car accident or from something that was unexpected, and you have named a minor child as a beneficiary, number one, please don't do that. But if you have, then a minor child can take a required minimum distribution until they hit the age of 18, or a surviving spouse. So if I die, I leave my IRA to my wife. She can actually pull that over to her name, and she can use my IRA for the rest of her life under her Social Security number, under her life expectancy tables. So that's the old system, and we're heading up against a break. But this is a really important issue because you're right, Mark. A lot of people have IRAs. They have tax-deferred accounts, and we need to understand what the tax issue is to the next generation if we were to die so that we can better set up our estate plan. And again, we need to have a good discussion about all of your assets, not just one in a bubble. And so getting good foundational planning is always step number one so that we can look at you holistically and even look at your family holistically to determine what is in your best interest and the family's best interest so that we can mitigate taxes instead of just paying unnecessary taxes as we go along.
Okay, Paul Grant, some of his heart about avoiding taxes, those estate taxes. It is possible with proper planning. You're intrigued by his approach and want to know more. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, we have a website set up, legacyandfaith.com. Head over there. There's past podcasts. There are educational workshops coming up in the near future. And there's ways to get a hold of us. So please head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week, looking at estate planning for taxes and IRAs. How are those handled? And I asked the question during the break, do most people have traditional IRAs or Roth IRAs? And you said still most people have traditional IRAs.
Yeah, by a rather large percentage, that a majority of individuals hold their wealth in tax-deferred accounts. That's because that's what you got at work. So specifically, if you had a company that matched your funds, that would always go to a 401k type of entity, and so therefore, or account. So therefore, you were putting into that system, and so that system would build very quickly. Mm-hmm. To where a Roth IRA, although that it's a Roth IRA is when you develop a fund with after-tax money, so therefore the taxes are paid, and that will build, and when you actually use it, it's tax-free, including the increase that the account experiences. And that also goes to the next generation in the same manner. So if someone inherits a Roth IRA, then that will be tax-free account. But a majority of wealth is still held and tied within a tax-deferred system. Mm. So then when it's inherited, our beneficiaries are going to pay a tax. Now, most of them are going to be under the new rule, which is within 10 years, you must fully liquidate an IRA account. So that's a bummer. Mm. This was a really bad law that was passed multiple years ago. Boy, and I've been three. I said two, but it might have been longer ago. And that is because the old system allowed a beneficiary who was going to be a good steward of those funds and wanted to hold on to those funds longer time, they were going to be able to use a lifetime stretch out like I talked about. But now we're under a 10-year rule. So therefore, within 10 years, you must liquidate the full account.
Even if you're just 30 years old when you
get it. Even
if
you're 30. Ah. And that's where it really becomes difficult, because most people earn a majority of their wealth in their 50s and young 60s. Mm. So your 50s are when is your wealth building stage. You get rid of your kids, you paid for college, they stop eating your food, they're on their own. And by the way, you have 20 years of experience, and so you have gotten raises and you're more valuable to the industry. You're probably the most valuable in your 50s. And so therefore, there is a higher wage earning capacity in that age group. So if that is true, and in my example, I said a 50-year-old inherited money, well, if it was more than $100,000 and that 50-year-old is at their highest wage earning potential, now they're required to take that IRA and add more taxable money to them. Really, we've just passed a larger tax bill onto the next generation. And there's things that we could do to mitigate that if we take a holistic family viewpoint, which very few people do. So IRAs, as they are taxed to the next generation now, it may actually be in the family's best interest that you start pulling more money from your tax-deferred account during your lifetime, because your taxable liability, your current income tax liability, may be less than what your beneficiaries would be. Mm. So if you have kids who are earning good money, you may actually look at that and say, I'm going to pay the tax now. I'm going to throw whatever I don't need into an investment so it can grow at a lower tax rate instead of having the income. And so then when it transfers, I set my family up better. I haven't harmed myself, because I'm not giving my money away, but rather I'm looking at a holistic viewpoint of a family at large instead of just thinking about taxes. And that's the problem. If we only look at taxes, based upon what is today's scenario instead of a long-term scenario, we're probably going to trap ourselves and make a bad decision. Mm. So taxes, everything is not revolving around taxes, but we do need to consider it. So IRAs under new rules, a 10-year time period now, and that could be a difficult thing for the beneficiary. They may end up paying a much higher tax rate depending on how they earn their money. So IRAs are something we definitely need to look at. We need to look at it holistically through your estate, and that's what good estate planning would do, is that we're not just going to give you a document. We're going to look at your estate and plan it holistically for your care and for your family's generational desires.
Okay, another thing that's on your list of issues is the step up in basis. What does that mean? I've heard that term.
Yeah, so step up in basis is that if I were to die, and I'm going to use a house in this scenario. So, for example, I own a house, and scenario one is I want to sell my house because it's a good market. And let's say that I bought my house for $200,000, and now it's worth $700,000. And in this story, it doesn't matter if I'm single or married. I can cover them both real quick. So we would all agree that the math says that I have gained $500,000 in that scenario. Why? Because I paid $200 for my house. Now I'm going to sell it for $700. And that's $500,000 of gain that I have gotten. Now, if you're a single person, the first $250,000 of that, you don't pay taxes on, but you would actually have to pay a capital gains tax on that second $250,000. Remembered marrieds, you get to use both of your exemptions. So both of you have $250,000. You can cover the whole $500,000, no capital gains. Okay. So if I sell my home, I might expose myself specifically with how a real estate property has just exploded in the past 5 years, I may be facing a capital gains tax. However, if I hold my house and then I die, and that home is now worth $700,000, my kids can come in and sell the home, and there would be no tax due at all, because a step up, what happens is that when I die, the value, in other words, the basis that I paid for the house, the taxing structure says, well, Paul died with the house, so it's as if he purchased the house for $700,000, not the $200,000 that he originally did. So I get to step up to today's value. Now, you can also step down. So it's really just a, it's really technically a basis adjustment. I don't know if it's going to go up or if it's going to go down, but houses right now, there's a high probability that everything has gone up. And so, therefore, we're going to use the term step up. You get a new basis. And when it's sold, that becomes, in essence, what your kids purchased the house for. So if they sell it for $700,000 and that's the price that it was when you passed away, no taxes are due. However, that can be destroyed. So if we do something foolish, like bring our children onto title of the house, okay?
Yeah, you're now, not a fan of that.
I am not a fan of that because I just called it foolish. And so that I was making my opinion very clear on how I feel about this. Good estate planning is always your answer. And so instead of using bad techniques or things that you think that you've heard that you may think it's easier, cause problems down the road. So if I brought my children onto the home, or let's even say I bring one responsible child onto the home. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, you know, when I die, then little Susie has her name on the house and it doesn't have to go through probate. Well, number one, everything can be resolved. Taxes, probate, who gets the money properly, how that money is protected in the hands of the beneficiary with good estate planning. Have I mentioned that so far this show? Yes, I have. Good estate planning resolves all of these things. And so if you bring little Susie onto your house, what you've done is that you've given Susie a gift. And so, number one, did you file in a gift tax return like you're required to by IRS law? Number two, Susie takes over her interest at what you purchased it for. So this step up that I just talked about, that when we go to sell the home, there's no taxes. That's only if we do good estate planning. So now Susie goes to sell the home after you've died, or she lives in it for a while because now it's hers, and then she goes to sell it. It's as if she bought the home for $200,000, and now we have capital gains that are due to Susie. Instead of doing it well, instead of doing it right, we could have done a good estate plan and avoided all of that tax problem. And so these are unnecessary taxes. We didn't sit down and get wisdom in dealing with a decision that we need to make with our property. So let's get wisdom. Let's talk it through. Let's look at all of your assets, whether it's a home, an IRA, investment accounts, businesses, business owners. You need to do estate planning. You have a lot of issues revolving around a business. Second marriages. So if you have a blended family, your estates are probably the most dangerous and can cause the greatest problems, both financially and emotionally in families, if we don't do good estate planning. So we need to stop. We need to get good wisdom and do it well so that we don't have to pay unnecessary taxes. So look, when we talk about IRAs, when we talk about bringing people onto an asset, all of this can lead to unnecessary taxes and unnecessary income taxes that we could have planned for well. So there's opportunities for us to avoid this. It's not tax evasion. I'm not talking, goodness gracious, no. Let's pay our taxes. I'm in favor of paying taxes, actually. It means I made something. What I'm against is paying an unnecessary tax or a tax that should have never been paid that we could have saved and done something else better with that money. I would rather use money for the advancement of what my children are called to in the kingdom of God, or to give it to ministries to promote the kingdom of God through what other people are doing, instead of paying an unnecessary tax.
Okay, well, if people want to find out more, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, legacyandfaith.com.
Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.